questions after 45 or 50 minutes, or if you don't like what's going on, get up and leave any time. not put off by that. Help me out, because I recognize some faces. How many were here yesterday for the first session? So about half of you. Okay. So what I'm going to do is to just go through some of that early preliminary stuff, like lightning speed. That'll be some repeating for some of you. And then I promised you a love story and a political story and some letters and things like that for today as well. So we'll try to keep all promises and get you out of here on time. The rules are the same as they were before, and that is if you've got a question or even a comment, interrupt me. I probably will ask for questions at some point, but it's not impolite just to say, Denny, what about this kind of thing? Do we have any of the, I don't think we have any, either of the two that have been to Holden before in like the 60s or early 70s. Do we have any of those in that category here today? Well, that's right. Okay. So we got, and you were here yesterday, right?
Yes.
And you were not Sir Becker?
I was not, no.
Okay, when were you in Holden?
I probably came first time in either 64 or 65.
Okay. I have trouble remembering what year a lot of things happened.
So. Well, I was probably about, I think I was 7.5 years old when I came the first time.
Okay, well, that's almost as good an excuse as being 67 years old.
There you go. Yeah.
which leads into the introduction that in June of 1962, I was 17 years old. I'd just graduated from high school and was all excited about hearing about this Holden Village where these Forerunners had been up here the summer before, and we were going to have a full summer of work camping, and I applied, and I was accepted, even though I didn't technically qualify, because I was just a high school student. They were supposed to be college students. I think they were short of guys, and I think it turned out that way. So today is going to be kind of a bit of sharing. I've got some publications that I'm going to pass around earlier than I did last time, and then cover some other anecdotes, new anecdotes, and also cover falling in love with a lovely lady named Karen Merkel, and losing her, finding her. This is not her, this is Barbara, my new bride, married July 1st, which you all could say congratulations now.
Congratulations.
Exactly. I began the process literally laying in bed. And I didn't bring this out last time, fantasizing over this brochure. And I looked at these pictures and these drawings, and I thought, oh, wow, wouldn't that be great? I could go there, I could do this, and I could do that. And it shows pictures from the era. So I'm going to pass on a lot of stuff and just trust you all that things are not going to just disappear on me. And then I didn't pass this around soon enough last time, and these are some selected just snapshots of some of people, some of locations. Basically, it's the boat trip up, and then there's one picture of me, only one of me, because I was the one who had the camera, and that's with the, quote, four horsemen, and there's five guys in the back of the truck. Others can explain that later. The trip up to Lima, and I found that shelter has been torn down that was up there to make it, to restore it more to its wilderness situation. But it's got pictures of it here. Then there's the Lucerne deck and some pictures from the switchback, and finally a group picture. And then out of this group, there are some enlargements and a set of proofs that are just laid out on paper in context. So if you've seen it all before and you don't need to see it again, pass it on to somebody else. And I'll start this one over on this side. And you guys get it when it's available. So it was June 11th when I came up here, so it's been 50 years and a little over 2 months. Truly a wonderful experience for me. People asked last time, did it, quote, change me? And I think there's so much change going on in your body and in your personality and in your educational system and everything else that it's hard to say what actually caused it. One repeat from last time, I'll tell you, and that's the daily schedule, because I think that's important. We started every morning at 6:15 with devotions, and my roommate over in Chalet 3 spent every morning starting about 6 o'clock trying to get my rear out of bed. Generally unsuccessful at that. 6:30 breakfast, 7 o'clock, clean room. 7:12, show up for work assignment. 7:15, start work. 9:30 in the morning was a break, usually Kool-Aid and peanut butter sandwiches or something. 12:45 or 1 was the biggest meal of the day. And then the lights flickered at about 10:20 or so, and by 10:30 there was no power available. And I think just for fun, I'm going to start by reading just some sections. These are letters to home. Now, I ended up becoming a professional writer and PR guy and press agent and all that kind of stuff, and I've learned how to write a lot better. I haven't learned how to spell any better than what's in here. Luckily, I'm not going to pass around this thing. So here we go. This is Monday, 11th of June, 10:05. So my first day. Barbara has asked me several times what my first impression was. Well, it's 10 minutes to the time they turn the generator off, so just a quick one. The bus trip was just loads of fun. This is the Greyhound bus trip from Portland to Chelan. On the Washington side of the Dalles, we picked up some people, one of which was Mike Wagner, Dr. Wilton Bergstrand's nephew. He was on his way to Holden, too, so we had lots to talk about. Let's see, as far as the boat trip was concerned, it would be well worth your time to drive up just for the ride. Now, the big part, Holden. I can honestly say I have never seen a more beautiful place in my entire lifetime. It is so majestic, I can't spell the words. Well, of course, I can't spell hardly anything, so to describe it. I also believe pictures just don't do it justice. The weather was fabulous, and I already have a slight burn. After lunch and dinner, we had the first of a series of Bible studies that have given me more in two Bible studies than the whole year of just regular stuff. We'll explain method later. I don't know what was special about the method. With the 40 people here and with no one singing softly, the Singspirations were one of the best. The food's okay so far. I was kind of focused on food a lot. Tomorrow we start strict work schedule, so must get to bed. Also, lights out will be in about 60 seconds, and then I go on from there. And I'll read you a couple more of those as we get through, just to give you a flavor of some of my things. How lucky I was to have a mother who said, someday he's going to want to know what he said in these letters, 50 years down the road. So, we had, and I read to you some of the work assignments, and I'm going to pass this around rather than read from it, so that you can see the kinds of things that we accomplished over the period of time that we were here. Briefly, I'll repeat and say that, again, Augustana was supposed to be providing youth from June 11th through July 2nd, but we filled an extra two-week slot because Lutheran Church Missouri Synod was unable to fill their slot. And then I promised you an explanation about what I think is a phenomenal technique. Dr. Bergstrand quickly figured out that in this environment, it was very difficult with all volunteers, fresh from the city, if you will, even if they were from the farms of Iowa and Minnesota, to pick up on what was necessary to be a work camper in this kind of an environment. And so he asked about 15 of the older members of the Unfolders, which was the Augustana group that I was a part of, if they could stay all summer. And you had to apply for it. And initially, I applied for it, got permission from my parents begrudgingly, and then found out that you definitely had to be older and had to be either in college or in some cases be near the end of college to qualify. They named themselves the Eagles, and these were the core group. And this core group, in effect, said, we are your leaders, and we not the adult leaders. The adult leaders were going to give broad directions and so on, but the Eagles were sort of the lieutenants, if you will, or the sergeants, maybe is a better metaphor. And they were the ones who really helped get the new volunteers as they came into Holden going. And it's consistent, again, with what I said earlier, and that's this Augustana philosophy that Dr. Bergstrand had, and that is that youth groups are not just to provide time and energy dissipation for the young people of the church, but it's a time to, in fact, teach them to be leaders. And I'm a product of that. And I became a leader in various congregations and helped build a church in Salem and was the president of a congregation. So it works, at least in one case. And I think that I can credit Luther League and Holden and other experiences for exactly that. Okay, this now kind of takes up the notes where I left off last time. I lived in Chalet 3, and if you look at Chalet 3, you look at it straight on, it's the room in the looking right out over the front porch, the three windows. I can remember sitting there writing letters about storms coming down the valley and things like that, and And that was my space for the entire time that I was here. The women were in the hospital. Gilbert, the executive director, or the guy who really ran the mechanics of the operation, was in Chalet 1. Worship and study, Bible study every day, regular Vespers, full-on Sunday worship with suit and tie. Wonderful. Absolutely. And in fact, when you look at the group picture, the blow-up of the group picture, I'm kind of hiding because I just have a sweater on. Everyone else is in a dress and a suit and tie and formalized, all standing on the stairs at the end of the community hall. One of the things that I did, I'm going to pass around a couple other things here. These are the work camper regulations worked out by the forerunners of 61 and the unfolders of 62. And we'll give you an idea of the kind of things we were under. And then just for fun, here are all of the names. This is the best list that I have, the one that's the most accurate. The early lists were people who had kind of said yes, but these are the ones who actually showed up. And you'll see very quickly, we've got Anderson, Andren, Carlson, Eklund, Elder, Folden, Fritz, where'd he come? Oh, and Hendricks, Hill, lots of Scandinavian and German good Lutheran names. But one of the things that I had fun with when I was here, I'm kind of a map freak. And so I have, as part of my memorabilia, something that I showed you last time, and I think I may, because I brought what I wanted to read you. I had two quadrangle maps in there. And I had my friends at the end of the period of time write on them. And then I had, it's very hard to read the handwriting. I do have some of the things that they said about what was going on, specifically about me. Not all that complimentary necessarily, but at least it gave you a feel for what was going on during that period of time. It says, these are not putting names to this, but you can look at them on the map if you want to. You ought to go in the comedy business. Denny, you made our group a lot of fun. Thanks. You seem to add spice needed for variety. You are the most original nut I've ever met. It would have been boring without you. Dennis, and I stopped going by Dennis right after this, by the way. Dennis, you're really funny, and I don't know how it would be. Maybe it would be pretty boring. You've been unforgettable. I mean, these are all different people. You've been unforgettable part of the unfolders. Your jokes and pep have livened us up. You're great. Nobody says anything really bad, obviously. You're a great guy. It's been great fun knowing you. Remember the rough, tough four horsemen and all the fun we had working together. Lucky for you, I've been around 3 weeks to wake you up in the mornings. On the other hand, lucky for me and the rest of us that you've been around to add a little zest and spice to the life. And Holden, I can truly say things would not have been the same without you. Denny, the son with a booming voice that never ceases. I don't think that's a compliment, by the way. Our work camp group really needed someone with life and enthusiasm and so on and so forth. Let's see here. Let me move down. Okay, this is now Berta the cook, okay? I was a real legend around here. I will sure miss you. And I did spend a lot of time in the kitchen mooching off of her. And then Gilbert, who was the general manager of Holden, said, Dennis, I trust your Holden Village experience will prove to be one of the highlights of your life. May God bless you and keep you in his service, Gil, the mayor. And he was absolutely correct. So it's nice to have, it's like a high school annual.
Yeah.
Someone said, what was Lucerne like? Well, here is a brochure from that era that'll give you an idea about Lucerne.
Denny?
Yes.
In your accomplishments, June 24 to 30, 1962, cleaned swimming pool.
Right.
What was the swimming pool?
You weren't here the last time, were you?
No.
Okay,
sorry.
Well, that's fine. I'll be real quick about it. I believe it was where the hot tub is now, but there is another one just like it that we found up above, like Chalet 10 or 12, or up in the woods up in there. And it was basically a simple concrete kind of pool with a thing in it, and it had a lot of junk in it. And we cleaned it out because we were always hot and sweaty, and we, you know, didn't want to swim in the lake. The four horsemen always ended up going down to the lake on a regular basis. And so we cleaned it out and filled it with water from a fire hose, and it turned out to be colder than the lake and never, ever warmed up. And I think we used it once, and that was it. But we put it down as an accomplishment. I mean, we put down as an accomplishment that we cleaned Chalet 3, okay? I mean, that was just like cleaning up your room, which you were supposed to do every day. But in our case, it was like, yes, all right, write it down on the list. And took an antenna down off of school. Yes, all right. It was an accomplishment. I promised you another story that now really seems stupid, but one of the things that happens up here, it's kind of a dry part of the world, relatively speaking. We're on the east side of the mountains, and the humidity is relatively low, and I hadn't brought any chapstick with me. And we didn't have a store, per se, here. There was no way to really, you could get things mailed to you. And it took a while to, you know, write home and then have your folks put something together. And they sent you cookies, and that was great fun and so on. So I got the most terrible chapped lips you can imagine. So we're down, and there's a little store, it was down in Lucerne, kind of a little old, open up the flap for the summer and service the tourists and so on, and a couple of buildings. And we could get soda pop down there. And I think I spent most of the cash I had on soda pop because we didn't have it here, and I like soda pop. So I wanted chapstick and ordered the chapstick. And the guy said, well, it'll take a couple days because I got to send the order down to Schlan, and they got to put it on my order and bring it up here. And so I said, fine. So 3 days later, I got chapstick, and oh, it was so wonderful to have that chapstick. And, you know, to this day, I go nowhere without my chapstick in my pocket. I mean, it started off, you know, it's kind of like when you've been deprived of something in a situation, and all of a sudden, when you get it, you say, okay, I'm going to keep it. I brought some boots with me that I thought were going to be fine. They fell apart about the first 3 days in this rough terrain and rough territory. I wrote home, and then my parents sent me a $20 check, of which I could spend $17 on for a pair of boots from Chelan. And just at that time, somebody had brought a pair of boots that were too big for them, and they fit me perfectly. And so I, you know, Holy Spirit works in wonderful ways, even when it comes to boots. Okay, time to read another part of another letter. I'm going to talk a little bit about the mind. This is now June 13, 1962, 5:45 p.m. And you'll notice it is on Howe Sound Mining Company accounting forms that we picked up at the mine level. Well, we stole. No, we picked them up. They didn't need them anymore. Dear family, well, guess what? We cleaned out today, dash, dash. Well, you're right. It was the mine. We really didn't clean it out. But we did scrounge around a bit. This is the most bizarre part. I haven't found any gold yet, but I have found copper, iron ore, mica, fool's gold, and a lot of granite, spelled G-R-A-I-N-E-T. Today we worked all day. They did this in every sneaky way. They said, you don't have to if you don't want to, but ... close quote. I thought this was pretty sneaky, but everybody worked the whole day. Yesterday we took a hike up to the water inlet in Copper Creek. This was only a short hike, but most of it was straight up, all capitals. Tomorrow afternoon we go to Heart Lake, and it's about 4 miles west of town, Railroad Creek Canyon, 8 mile round trip. Today we, four guys and a man, went down the road to the Lucerne area to fix some road barriers. We saw 21 deer. Yesterday on the same type of trip we saw 11 deer. On the way down to the boat, we saw a mountain goat. Now, on the way down to the boat, this time we saw a mountain goat. I think they have one staked out there that they put a salt lick out for. Everybody see a mountain goat on the boat trip up lake, on kind of thing? You know, don't you think maybe they got one with a leash? Or maybe it's like in Disneyland, and it's mechanical, and it just kind of looks at you, and it's like Abraham Lincoln or something like that.
I like the four guys and the man. That was kind of funny.
I hadn't thought of it quite that way, but you're right. Well, back to the road. We were hot and sweaty and thirsty when we worked our way to the side of the lake. It was too much. We drove down to the lake, took off our shoes, and went in our jeans and shorts. Brr! But boy, was it fun. I could fill 100 pages with things like that just for the first 2 days. Well, tonight I graduate, so I may have some type of party here. Fun. A footnote on all this fun. For the last 2 afternoons, it has poured down rain. Love ya, Danny. And, of course, that night of my high school graduation, I had already told you the story about the fire drill down here where the hose got loose, and I ate a rock, and I used to joke that on my high school graduation night, I did a lot of heavy drinking.
So what was graduation from here?
Well, you know, it was funny because, again, we had a kind of unusual schedule. We had a core group that was supposed to be here for 3 weeks. Then they said, you can actually stay an extra 2 weeks. Well, I had to go home for my sister's wedding, and then I came back, and so I was technically here for that second 2 weeks. And then there were 15 Eagles who stayed here all summer for when the ALC group came in and the German, or the Free Lutheran Church group came in. And they were the core that carried it all through. So there was no time when all of the unfolders, if you will, were leaving. Now we had reunions, but we had to have, you know, dual reunion. We had to have one in Seattle where there were about four or five of us, and another one in Minneapolis where everybody else was. But we would get together. But again, I've only maintained contact with one person, and that's my friend Karen. So there wasn't really a graduation. We did the same helloing and goodbyeing and all that kind of stuff, although we greeted people off the bus right in front of Chalet 1, and we usually sang how great they are and instead of the stuff that goes on now. That doesn't mean that it's, you know, that much different. It's still the same kind of thing. Okay, I promise you a love story and a political story, and just it's more fun to talk politics, so no, I'll talk before. The politics will come first. What was going on in 1960-62 in the Lutheran Church? And some of you may know a lot of this, and I'm going to be real brief in the background. But obviously, when Lutherans came and immigrated to this country, they brought their church with them, and they brought the Danish Lutheran Church, the Swedish Lutheran Church, the Norwegian Lutheran Church, Northern German, Southern German, Suomi, the Finnish Church, that sort of thing. And then they, because of the language differences, if nothing else, they would have those churches then locally. And then out of that came the political organizations, and Augustana was the Swedish Lutheran Church. Then there began a series of mergers with all of these smaller churches coming together. And in 1960, the ALC was one of the merged organizations. And then this is right about the time that I was like a junior, sophomore, whatever, in high school, and I was a leader in Luther League. So we were getting briefed about the fact that, oh, there was going to be another merger. And that was the merger that was going to create the LCA. And then later in 87, the LCA and the ALC came together to form the ELCA. So all of this had an impact on youth programs, because remember, Augustana had a very strong youth program, a national program, lots of money spent on it, lots of results with the philosophy that I described earlier, and Wilton Bergstrand, or Bergie, as he was called by everybody, you know, he was a PhD and so on, but he was Bergie, and he really was the father of that. And he made some, he was very outspoken, a very strong personality. He spoke out publicly against the merger. This merger, by the way, was not in his mind going to be a merger, because the United Lutheran Church in America, which was a pre-merger name for the largest body of this merger, headed by Franklin Clark Fry, was going to pretty much absorb a bunch of little synods in terms of numbers of people who were in congregations. And so no matter what you think about that, one way or the other, here's the guy who for 30 plus years has been the leader of his youth program, has been very successful, and he was publicly opposed to it. Well, you can imagine what Franklin Clark Fry thought about that. And ironically, the LCA merger was formalized. Now, it wasn't official, it didn't happen, didn't kick in until like either December 31st or January 1st of 62-63. But it was formalized in Detroit, Michigan on June 28th of 1962. Well, that's about the day that I had one of the few one-on-one long conversations with Dr. Bergstrand up about Chalet 9 or 10, which is where he was staying. Remember it vividly. He was working on his book on John the Baptist. He had his shirt off because it was a day like this, and he was getting some good sun. And he was about to tell me that I wasn't going to be able to be an Eagle because I wasn't old enough and the insurance wasn't going to cover it, and he was trying to let me down easy and so on and so forth. And then we just talked generally about Holden and that sort of thing, and he was very depressed. He did not think that Holden was going to continue, honestly. He didn't say it in those words, but it was very clear to me that he wondered what was going to happen to this, what he had had the vision for, along with Gilbert and along with a lot of other people. And then I find out, you know, 50 years later or 45 years later, when I read his autobiography called, I think, Roses in Christmas or Roses in the Snow or something like that. It's a personally published thing, that he knew that he was through as soon as that merger was in place. And in fact, he left the national office and went to a parish somewhere in the Midwest or on the East Coast, and was a parish minister really pretty much from then on, because he knew that under Dr. Fry, he would not have any authority to do anything. He then states, in his opinion, that Holden was way away from New York, and the headquarters went from where, Minneapolis or whatever, wherever up the Augustana was, to downtown Manhattan, and that they didn't have an interest in another, quote, Bible camp. Well, if you've been here for more than 2 hours, you know that Holden is a lot different than a, quote, just Bible camp. And that's what they thought this was a glorified, expensive Bible camp. So, Bergstrand, in fact, did support what he called the good merger, which was the creation of the ELCA. The impact on Holden, I think, is worth noting, and that is we had a conversation with some of the business leaders of this organization the other night and asked them questions about, you know, formal church support of Holden Village, and it's virtually not there. The support comes from donors, about 40%, and the rest of it comes from fees and income from, you know, people coming here and paying the bills, in effect. So it's a nonprofit organization, and it's being supported by people who are making donations. That's not a pitch. It's just the reality. And none of the big church organizations are, you know, in a marketed sort of way. Obviously, they promote it, and you have events in your community, and so on and so forth. But they used to contribute hard dollars. The last contribution that was made by Berge and his family, his mom died, at, I believe, the end of that summer. And in her honor, they raised money for an organ, and it's the organ that is in the community hall, whatever we're calling that now, rec hall, community hall. And it's kind of off to the side, and I went over and found it first thing I was over here, and it's got a plaque on it, and it says in honor of, and it gives his mother's name, and then the donation that was made. And that's, he frankly was not invited back that often in the next period of time. He did come back on occasion and things like that, but he really felt like, you know, that he had kind of got it started, but that he had not been appreciated during that part of his life. So it's kind of a sad story, but you have to look at what he and, again, probably a dozen other people, if you were to really look at it, a dozen other people were involved in really having a vision for what could go on here. All right, I'm going to read you another little thing, and then I'll have time for the love story. We were sent, by the way, a pad of these, and this was the program for 1962. Now, you wonder, why did they select 62 as the starting year? Because you could have certainly picked 61. You could have picked 60 when it actually sold to, you know, for a dollar to LBI or something like that. You could pick a lot of different years for the, and they had to pick one. Well, I think it's a good reason. This was the first year we really formally began to accept visitors. And this was the brochure. They had a whole pad of these that they sent to all of us. You see my little name stamp on here. That was kind of a compulsive thing to do in my young age. And then they had a big program late in June and into August named Stahikin. It was all tied to the World's Fair. And I'll pass that around. The not original Lady of the Lake, but the first boat to have the Lady of the Lake name. This is before Lady of the Lake 2, and I think it's before Lady of the Lake. There was two Lady of the Lake 1s. This one's in between. There's one that's much older than this, and now this one's gone. I wonder where it is. But there's a postcard. I'm sorry, I need to stand up. And because I'm very proud of this, Carol Hinderly was the executive director who came in after 62, and they wanted to keep us all in the loop, so there's my, quote, founder. Anybody got one of those?
How long was Hinderly here?
You know, there's a book in the bookstore that will give you in infinite detail, but I believe it was like 10 years or over a period of time.
Yeah, he was here in 72.
Yeah. And he had, you know, along with a lot of other executive directors and executive director teams, because there have been several husband-wife teams, each have put their imprint on it, as I have seen. And I'm no expert on that. But here's a couple of news articles. Again, I'll pass those around. I think that's the last of the pass-arounds, except for the map. If you're real careful with this, I'll pass this around as well. But when I got home from my sister's wedding, and, you know, it was a quick turnaround, a couple of days, but I had a chance to write an article for the Augustana Lutheran Church, which was the name of the congregation I grew up in Northeast Portland, as well as the synod that it was under, about Holden Village. So this is July 5th, 1962. In all the millions of words said about Holden Village, none can adequately describe the setting, the program, or the village itself. There are many key phrases, some of which are a place apart, Stahikin, an Indian word meaning the way through, the mining of mines. The best one, I feel, is getting back to it all. I have just returned from a three-week work camp at Holden Village, the new Lutheran Retreat Center for Young Adults, which is located in the Cascades of North Central Washington. Holden is a place where a young adult can become closer to his God. Notice the pejorative male pronoun thrown in there to sexist writing of 1962, right? Away from radios, TV, and newspapers, one can really, quote, get back to it all. The program this summer will include an open house, work camps, drama workshops, presentations from PLU players, home enrichment courses. What's a home enrichment course? I wrote it. I don't know what it is. Home enrichment courses.
Sounds good.
Hiking to waterfalls and lakes, Bible study, and last but not least, worship and meditation. The 3 weeks I spent at Holden Village were full of many wonderful moments, yet 3 weeks was too short for me, thus I plan to return for another week at work camp. You can visit Holden Village this summer for a day or longer. Contact Gilbert at a Seattle address, and so on and so forth. Okay. Karen Merkel was one of the work campers. And wait a minute, a file with Karen's name on it. And here is a picture of her and one of her fellow work campers, and also a picture of her. I'll start it from different directions. And the one I'm starting over here is Karen with Fern Van Cura, who was the nurse. And you can actually see the architecture behind that one and recognize the kind of architecture that we all are in now.
Now, which one's Karen in this picture?
Karen's the one on the left.
The left,
right. Okay. And she's wearing the Bismarck or Mankato State or something.
Got it, yeah.
Yeah, right. She was from Bismarck, North Dakota. So, you know, she was a year older than I was. She completed her first year of junior college. She was beautiful, you know, and I was smitten. And she lived up in the hospital because she was assisting the nurse. And so if you go up to the laundry facility now, which appropriately has the name Agape on it, and if you go off to that far side, there's a porch there. And we spent the afternoons whiling away the time talking and getting to know each other on that back porch. And it was just wonderful. And it was just great for me. And afterwards, we kept in touch. And I, you know, pined for her and thought about taking the train from Pacific Lutheran in Tacoma back to North Dakota just to see her for the summer and so on. She had come down to Portland and visited me briefly and met my family. And, you know, she knew as a sophomore in high school that she was going to be a missionary. And she was committed to that, and that was wonderful. In fact, that was one of the attractive things about her. And so then, all of a sudden, I'm kind of through with college and moving along, and she's in, you know, Uruguay and Bolivia. And we exchanged a few letters, which I have kept here. And that was great, but that Bolivia's a long ways away. You know, you can't just say, hey, you know, find some time and come to Bolivia. So I lost track of her. And, you know, it's really kind of sad when you have a really, in this case, it was a very, very strong friendship. And it was, I wanted to kind of know whatever happened. And I didn't know where she was. So now fast forward to about 6 years ago. I'm having trouble with my internet. And I call Quest. And you know how that works, folks. Quest has, what, 7 sites or 70 around the world, in those days around the country. And randomly, when you call in the 800 number, it gets sent to one of those. And then randomly, whoever has hung up their phone is in the cubicle that's the support person, your call is assigned to whoever's next in the loop, right? So think of the randomness of this. And put together, earlier today, there must have been a mathematician, or last night, serving ice cream, because we talked about the permutations and combinations of flavors of ice cream, number of cones, number of scoops, and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, and we got well over 1 million and we quit because we were eating ice cream. So I got through. And I got through to somebody, and this person knew less about it than I did. And that happens. So I just said, hey, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Immediately called back. I got, you know, another plate, and they said, the wait will be 30 minutes. Well, all right, hang on. Called back a third time about 2 hours later. And again, the randomness, it assigns me to some site, and I get a person named Cindy. Okay? And I'm talking to Cindy, and Cindy, she knows what she's talking about. And she's making things happen. And of course, when you're fussing with computers, you know you have to reboot once in a while, right? And they make changes in something, and they say, now reboot your computer. And so I always like to use that time effectively when I'm talking to somebody, even if they're in Manila or Bangalore or wherever it is. You know, they're like, hi, my name is Bob. I'm here to help you. So I asked him, where are you, Cindy? Well, what do you mean, where am I? I said, well, you know, what Quest bunker do you live in? Where are you working? She said, Bismarck, North Dakota. I said, wow. And then, okay, she says, you know, okay, that didn't work because we rebooted the computer. And again, what are the odds of all this happening? I had to reboot the computer a second time. You know, it could have been fixed the first time. Thank you very much, Cindy. Hang up the phone. That was the end of that. So while the computer is rebooting the second time, I say sort of rhetorically to no one, man, I fell in love with one of the most wonderful women in the entire world from Bismarck, North Dakota. That was 1962. I wonder where Karen Merkel is today. And there is a gasp at the other end of the line. And she goes, Karen Merkel is my mother. And I said, no, she's not. And she said, yes, she is. And I said, no, she's not. And literally three times back and forth. And then finally I said, no, no, the Karen Merkel I know from Bismarck, North Dakota, you know, became a missionary, never got married, certainly could not have a daughter your age from what I can tell from your voice. And I have lost touch with her and have no idea where she is, but she can't be your mother. Oh, my Aunt Karen Merkel. Well, Karen's twin brother's second wife's first name was Karen. And they had Cindy. And Cindy was the one who was helping me. And she says, give me your email and I will write Aunt Karen. And I, of course, got an email right back from Karen saying, you know, what's going on in your life? We talked back and forth. And I was a leader within Our Savior's Lutheran Church. And so I invited her up as part of a program we had and had her as my guest. And so you see pictures of her there and you've seen pictures of me. This is me up at the altar of Our Savior's and this is Karen up at Timberline Lodge. And she is now the executive director, not the executive director, she is the regional director for the World Mission Prayer League, WIPL, which is a Pan-Lutheran missionary organization, and she is in the Southwest and lives down in Southern California, and we still communicate on a regular basis now just to keep track of what things are going on. So, we've got 10 minutes of the scheduled time. I've got a few more notes that I can go through, but I want to make sure that if you've been holding questions deep in your heart that you'd like to ask, and by the way, I'm obviously so much in love with Barbara that I can tell that story in front of her and have told that story in front of her at least a dozen times, and so she's probably very sick of it by now. It's a fun story to tell. And again, you should go out and buy a lottery ticket after that happens, right?
You are just a lucky man.
That's exactly the way I look at it. Exactly the way. In many ways. Very lucky and very fortunate. So, questions, or do you want me to move into a couple of other little areas? Yes.
I've got a question. Where is Missouri Synod in Holden?
Well, I don't honestly know. I know that they were,
there's still a Missouri Synod representative on the board.
On the board. Okay, good. Because there was a, they just simply didn't have their act together enough to get a work camping group here in 62, and that's all I know at this point. That, and I was interested in doing some reading, and you may be helpful in here as well, the fact that we have an open table communion at Holden, and that this is an ELCA congregation, which, you know, that indicates at least, I guess, some connection. But again, that's a whole nother lecture on interchurch politics. Yes?
Part of it, I can tell, is that Elmer Witt, one of the directors, were out of Missouri Synod.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I like the fact, I mean, I'm
25 years ago.
Yeah, I'm sort of personally now, speaking personally, I like the concept of sort of pan-Lutheran, which is all Lutherans. One of the things that Franklin Clark Fry and some of my other reading had envisioned was that the merger of the LCA, which would be followed by the ALC and the LCA coming together, which would be followed by all Protestant churches coming together, and there would be one main ecumenical ministry. And so he had thoughts that could happen. Knowing a lot of friends and a lot of different faiths, it would seem very difficult for that to happen, but Holy Spirit works in wonderful ways. So, yes?
Our congregation is Missouri Synod, and of course we were coming up here, you know, in 1970.
Right.
And as were a lot of other people from the Missouri Synod. But when our church was 60 years old, and it's now 90 years old,
wow,
we brought up 60 people. And you know, I think on the West Coast, certainly you won't find closed communion hardly existing in that, even though people like to perpetuate that rumor.
Yeah.
And maybe in some parts of the U.S. that is true. It is not true on the West Coast.
Well, I know in Oregon, the ELCA and the LCMS, if you will, you know, the two bishops were best of friends. One of the bishops before he retired was a classmate of mine at PLU, and you know, they each attended each other's events all the time, and it was a very good relationship between them.
Yeah, I don't.
Yes, question.
What was the state of the mind back then? I mean, were the did you ever venture in? Was it all boarded up? Could you get into any of the shafts?
Oh yeah. Well, let's put it first way. First thing we did was board up the main shaft, and it was off limits to anybody, and thank goodness. Bergstrand talks about in 61 that miners gave him a tour, and they went back and at least the main shaft, and then realized that they needed to close it up. And in the briefing we had when I got here on the mine remediation project, they're running into, you know, collapses and things now, so there's no way that anybody's going to be able to do that in the future. But we had access, and in fact, I would have loved, if this project had not been going on, one of the things I would have liked to have done was go up there. In fact, we did a lot of work on the tailing piles. We were taking some of the large timbers and the wooden pipes and moving them out of the way. We spent one entire day, one of our projects that's listed on hopefully something that's not going to leave this room, is the project list, which was picking up scrap metal because it was a hazard, and we realized that it was a hazard. The office buildings that were up there, the business office buildings that had, I had an annual report that I shipped to somebody, I think, or I may still have it, I think. Either way, it was, you know, stuff was just laying around, and they had just picked up and left, and this was just something that they would probably throw away today, but it was available. Core samples, for example, were up there. The actual mine picture, however, that you see of the building, you can see looks pretty much the same today. You know, it didn't have any roof on it. It was just kind of a skeleton from the top down, where they would put the raw ore in the top and do various grindings and boilings of it. Not boilings, but grindings of it to break it down to get the high-grade ore and ship it down. So, yeah, we had access. In fact, our crew, I didn't do any trail building. And the other men, it was very sexist. Women did, you know, cleaning and fixing and, you know, stuff. And most of the time, we were doing the road work and the mine work and the trail building. And our little subgroup didn't do the trail building. And trail building is great. I love it. People can do it. It just seemed kind of boring to me to, you know, have somebody draw a line and then a lot of manual ditch digging, in effect, to get there. But the stuff that we were doing a little more thinking. And we were assigned mostly to the road and mostly up at the mine level.
Where did they ship the ore to?
Where did they ship it to?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. That's something you'll have to find out.
Tacoma.
Okay.
Or Sarco.
Sarco and Tacoma.
And they just got done cleaning most of that up here. Right. A couple of years ago, yes. There's still those few pieces left.
Yeah. Yes, in the back.
Yeah, we were told that before the Holden was donated to the churches, that what had happened was they had tried to completely destroy the mine. They had blown it up. They had done all kinds of things trying to destroy the mine buildings.
Well, I don't have any knowledge of that, and B, I saw no evidence of that. So you have to pick that up from other sources. Everything that I have read about it and everything I saw in 1962 pretty much said it was everybody just in probably 2 days was moved out of here, leaving everything in place. And then vandals came in and started taking things and breaking windows and that kind of stuff. But in general, there was. And then I said this to several people, I think last time or to somebody else. I've spent a lot of time as a development director, and no development director in their right mind would ever accept this place. You know, and LBI really, you know, didn't accept it. It was Bergstrand and Gil Berg that said, let's get all the Lutheran organizations together and make it happen. And if you were to put together a plan for, you know, solid waste disposal problems and buildings, and you'd say, and it says in many places in the history of this organization where I've read, if you ask the experts about it, they'd say it can't be done, and then they wouldn't do it. Well, they didn't ask the experts. They just went ahead and did it, and it got done. But I would have argued strongly, if I had the knowledge I have now after having done what I've done professionally, don't you dare accept that gift. You know, and I can envision the people at the House Sound office in Salt Lake that were handling this were going, we finally got some sucker to take it. And look what it's turned into. You know, I mean, this is, again, it's a modern miracle, because it would have cost them so much, and it's still costing them because the company that came after the company that came after the company is funding all of the remediation over here. But in terms of even just taking this down, it would have cost them a lot, let alone building it up and making it into this gem of the Cascades that we have now. Other questions?
Where would the Vandals have come from? You know, how
the story I have read, and I didn't hear this firsthand, was that when Gilberg and a delegation from LBI came up, they came up because they had to look at this thing that was now being offered to them, that because of Wes Creeb's letter to Howe Sound over several years, came up in a private boat, and there was actually some kind of a taxi service from Lucerne that would give ghost town tours. And that's how they got up here the first time to look it over. And there's a story of Gilbert sleeping on the floor at Chalet 1 with a pack rat trying to take his boot over to the fireplace. Which is why you keep all your snacks, I guess, out of the way. Okay, let me see if I can find one more that I'm willing to share. Well, hello there. And this is just Saturday, so I've now stopped putting dates down. But tell me what date it is right now. Somebody. 15th. The 15th? Okay. Mm-hmm. Is everybody sure of that?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I lose track. I'd have to look at my watch. So, and I obviously did in June of 62 as well. Well, hello there, I say. The reason I broke my record on sending a letter every other day is because of an overnight trip I took to Lyman Lake and Lyman Glacier. I could make some beautiful descriptive lines about the 5 feet of snow or our little cabin meant to hold nothing, which held 15, but I won't. I'll tell you all about it later. Boy, I sure like the cookies Grandma sent. Yum, smack, etc. Oh, by the way, I still haven't found the rock. Remember the rock we started this whole story with? However, it might have fallen out early some morning while I wasn't looking. I just cleaned out our room, swept, mopped, made beds, washed windows, emptied waste paper. Shock. Well, that's the happy note. I will mail this letter, which probably won't leave until Monday morning, so you will probably be reading it on Thursday. So I'll end with that, and if anybody wants to talk, we're kind of at the closing point. Okay, well, I'll tell the rock story again, if anybody wants to hang around for that. But it's obviously fire.